listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers Series 2025. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Martina De Dominicis, whose work Latente was invited to this year's Attention series. Martina talked about nostalgia as something more than missing the past, but missing the future, one which one thought would come but didn't. She talked about how fruitful it can be to trust one's gut feelings and about the importance of unlearning as well as doing things one cannot do yet. My name is Almut Kreser, and it was my pleasure to have a chat with Martina. We are sitting in Mumok again, inside the exhibition of the pop-up archive of Impulstanz. And this is why there might be sounds around us. It's visitors of the exhibition. And I'm here with Martina De Dominicis today.
Hello.
And I'm very happy you're here. I'll start with a very brief introduction for those who might not know you who are listening to this podcast. Can't imagine that there is anyone, but still. You grew up in Italy, you became a dancer, and you more or less toured the world with big companies. And then you settled down in Austria, and you studied research movement in Linz at Anton Bruckner University. And since a couple of years, you are based in Vienna, and you worked with a lot of people who are also based here. There was Vese Fernandez, I remember. I have it. Yeah, Karin Power is known to the festival as well.
Michikatsu, Matsune, who else? Georg Blaschke, Daphne Horenschitz also. Yeah. Magdalena Forster also recently, also through, we got to know through our collaboration in the frame of this piece, Latente, and we found very strong affinities. So I'm also now part of some of her projects. Yeah.
Yeah, let's maybe start with the piece that got invited for the Attention series. As you just said, it's called Latente. And it premiered last year in Vuk already, and it had been shown in Salzburg as well, if I'm right. Would you tell me about the, lead me through the development of the piece. Where did it start?
It actually started in the frame of my studies in Linz, where I was working on practices that try to investigate different modalities of seeing while performing. And I started to work with this idea of tactile or haptic gaze. And so I started to engage with very durational practices that would really investigate what happens when you receive tactile informations without touching anything, so only through seeing. And somehow the state that I could access through this practice was very close to a sense of longing and of missing. So there was this space in between wanting to really touch something but not really accessing that. And through this, I started to look into nostalgia and longing and exploring how this is very present also in my life in a certain way, not only what arises from the somatic practice. An entire conceptual world opened up to me, and so I started to look also through some metaphorical association of this being in between the now and the past and the future. So nostalgia not only meant as missing the past, but also as an anticipation of a future you thought that will come and it's just not coming. And I think this relates very much to, how many people are feeling in this time. So with this idea of being in between, I started to look into the Middle Ages as a time, and also because it has been called, it has been also defined as Dark Ages, and this is mainly a definition that comes from the Enlightenment time. So there is this very, very duality, this very like
contradiction is the word.
Contradiction between this culture of the transparency and scientifically provable reality and this time of the Middle Ages that was seen as obscure and where nothing really good for humanity happened. So this I also found very interesting because I was working with touch and with navigating spaces in a haptic way. So I found it interesting to play with this sense of how to navigate a space without seeing because it's too dark.
And that sounds like there was a lot of theoretical involvement before, which started, what time are we talking about? Like how years ago? Or
I think we are in 2025, so we're talking beginning of 2023, actually. That's when I tried to frame this concept and sent an application for making this project. And then because it wasn't so easy to stick to the, you should produce this thing exactly 1 year later, the project was delayed, and this gave me so much space to really, engage in quite of a broad, also theoretical research and historical research. Which then brought me to the point of having the feeling that I have 17 concepts now to deal with. And it was really hard to hold this multitude. But then I was also very taken care of beautiful friends in Vienna who were really encouraging me to stay with this multitude and not to be too worried of like, it isn't about this, it isn't about that. And there was something that I couldn't explain verbally. Why do I feel that all those things are pertaining to each other? And I just went for it. as only somehow then the final composition created this thread that was impossible to express verbally in a way.
And when did you start then? When did you find your collaborators for this piece? And what was the process when you began working together with them? And when you started, when did you start to actually work in a space?
So Manuel Rigler, the composer of the piece, is also my partner. And somehow in the already in the phase of application, it was clear we were going to work together. I didn't want to be too ambitious with the scale of this work. So in the beginning, it was a very reduced idea of being only me and him. But then I knew that what I want to work on is not possible that it's going to be a solo. and then I met quite by chance Magdalena Foster, and at the time we didn't know so much each other, but I just got this very gut feeling that I want to work with this person, and I invited her into the project without having seen her ever performing or knowing what she does.
Exciting.
And so we began working on the piece last year around May. Actually, we had a couple of meetings in the studio just to share the basic practices that I was busy with. And then the actual creation began in Innsbruck because we received this residency and co-production also money from Vorbrenner. All in all, from June 2024 until premiere, we could work in the studio for about 5 weeks in total. So it was rather a short, pressed together process, and that meant a lot of preparation and a lot of conviction and in some way faith that this is what we're gonna work with.
And it was shown in book project room, and this time you showed it here in Mumok in Hofstallungen, which is a completely different room and a very special room. And I was wondering, since the attention also uses this other place in at Fuk, you could have done it in the same place, but I'm sure it was a decision to try it in a different place. Or how did you feel about this change?
I was asked actually if that would be an option for us, and I said it is definitely a really good option, but I think the curatorial team wanted to create a situation in which more people can watch the piece, so the decision was to propose a bigger space. And of course, it comes with a lot of labor, because the piece is really every time needs to be adapted. There are the space is open. We try to treat the room as a home or as an ambient where we are all meeting, and to have less as possible the feeling it's a theatrical situation.
Which worked out pretty well.
That's good to hear. the room in Book has already an architecture that it's a little bit more complex. It has pillars in the middle. It helps somehow to create this seeing and not seeing moments because of how the room is made, while the Hofstallung is basically a long, slightly curved tunnel shaped room, and also with many technical restrictions. So, but yeah, it's becoming really a practice itself, how to activate the room in a certain way and how to make visible things that aren't really there. And we had the same situation in Salzburg. In Salzburg, it was a black box theater, so even harder because it speaks like performance space with everything. Then we had a really beautiful, Gastspiel at a very beautiful festival in Zurich called Performat. And we were invited there in July. And this is a festival that actually happens in public spaces. So it was really great to be part of it, because we worked with a rather very small room. It was an old garage with, I don't know what it's called, but there is a pit in the ground where mechanics used to stand and repair cars. And it's like 1 meters and a half deep, and it's along the entire room. There was a crane on the ceiling that could slide everywhere. So it took us maybe a couple of days, but then I felt, wow, this room is offering so much. So many images were recontextualized. We used also the outside, the parking lot of this place. It was a bit of a punky version, but what I love is that from being in this space, some new things happened that I decided to then carry with me also in this other space. So somehow, wherever we are, we bring this ghostly experience of where have we been before. Yeah.
So there was a bit of the garage in Hofstallungen as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I felt like the space really fit perfectly, because it has, with this arched ceiling, the vault, and also these cutouts in the wall, it has this sort of atmosphere of a sacrificed room somehow. Yes. It has something church-likey. And I was also quite impressed about, because I think this room is very difficult with sound, but
it worked out.
I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah. Let's say that Manu is a really great musician, and he was working very closely with sound technical team of the festival, and together they decided not to have any big speakers, but rather many small ones, so that the reverb is a bit under control. What also really helped somehow, even though it was not so much, but even the presence of these curtains and textile would absorb a bit the reverb, and as well also all the people who were there. So actually in the premiere we realized, wow, we need triple the volume because the sound is disappearing into people's bodies, which is amazing. But and also I have to say that many of the music parts within the piece do have already this reverby quality of coming from far away. So for some scenes it was actually really helping, especially with the choir in the beginning, like it was almost like having a mic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reminds me that I actually wanted to ask you before we talk about the piece, but anyways, I ask you now, if you could briefly describe what is happening in the piece for those who might listen to the podcast but not have seen the piece, mm-hmm. just so that they get an idea of what you're doing there, you were doing there.
So the piece begins with a red room, which is strongly inspired by the effect of the sunbeams going through church windows that have colored glasses. So the idea was to already invite the people into a hyper-aestheticized fictional room. What we are doing in the beginning, we are working with different ways of framing what surrounds us, somehow in a wish of decoding this reality. And the filter we apply to our vision, it's inspired by monastic and medieval hands in paintings. It looks very decorative, but somehow we are really busy with something. And from there, we start to send tones towards what we are looking at. So the tactility of the gaze is very strongly activated until we all start to choir together. And this choir was developed with the practice of remembering something you already heard, which was also proposed by my colleague and friend Vesa Fernandez. She was also very strongly part of the process, I would say, mainly in a sense of like talking about, but she was also supporting a lot all what is the voice work in the piece. And we play with trying to remember a composition from Perutin, is a medieval composer, Widerund Omnis, that's the name of the composition. And so little by little we developed this choir, which has a bit this holy thing that gets carried, but not completely. And at the end of this choir, Magdalena and I are sending to each other very close notes that are shaking with one another and produce another frequency. And that frequency we use as the frequency we had to achieve for opening the next level. So one of the curtains open and a big part of the space is revealed. The light situation is very different. It's rather dark and rather white-ish. And it begins with me engaging into a practice of, I call it incarnation, because I started to play a lot with using these words that are part of like Catholic beliefs, such as incarnation, transubstantiation, all things that have to do with Christian Catholic faith. And I work in this sense with speculating of what does it mean if right now the matter of my body is actually incarnating a romantic ballet dancer dancing Les Sylphides, or so this all first part tries to actually invite the world of romantic ballet into the space. And this came a bit because we were working with ghosts of our lives. So my background came a lot into this piece also as a way of reappropriating something that felt at the time was appropriating me. And
in terms of dances that you had to dance?
Yes, exactly. I'm not saying anything new, for I think so many dancers are having backgrounds that then they try to get rid of in their bodies. And so I did for many years. And nevertheless, in this process, I started to almost like reconciliate with certain things. And through this practice of incarnating, I try to actually access and speculate on how does this ballerina, did this ballerina feel embodying that? Or I try to connect to emotions of people that were living in other times. And slowly I find my another ghost, which is Italian songwriter Patti Pravo, who wrote this song called Pensiero Stupendo, which means a wonderful thought. And so it starts in this moment, like the first band moment, because part of the process was also like practicing band or pretending to be a band, although Magdalena and I have a rather poor musical background and skills, but I didn't care. For me, it was like, how can we touch each other through this now? So there is the first song in which I am singing, Magdalena is playing piano and Manu is at the synths. When this song is over, we move to the altar. So we have a table where we have all our little props. And this somehow, it didn't come immediately, but through the last phase of creation last year, I decided to treat the dramaturgy of the piece almost as liturgical. So trying to get also inspired by this modality of, we are doing this, we prepared that, and now we go to the next. So there is a series of actions that needs to be accomplished and performed one after another, almost like in a religious ceremony. So what we do is we start to cream our body, and after that we begin a kind of knotting dance with Magdalena while Manuel goes back to the music. And through this, we sort of arrive very close to the second curtain. But before opening that second curtain, there is a necessity to actually call out for someone to open this curtain, or to a permission to open this curtain. And that happens through a song that Magdalena is singing on top of my shoulder. And I'm playing an instrument called toccante that Manuel was building, actually. It's a very beautiful synthesizer. It looks like a medieval instrument, but it's not. And this image is very inspired. Also, what I started to get really obsessed with is little Instagram memes that are about religious representations and how tacky they can be, and all of this like South Italian madness for like running with a Madonna on your shoulder. All of these things, they were very present for me, you know.
And she really looked like a Madonna, because you sort of put her inside this cutout area where you would want to have a Madonna standing.
Exactly. So yeah, this was really inspired, all of those little niches. Like, I'm not sure what they were meant to be in the beginning, but it really looks like there is statues missing, no?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So we decided, okay, there we do it. And the song is very beautiful. when the song is accomplished, we undo this position and we open the last part of the space, which then suddenly reveals the extreme length of this space, and it creates this very magical distance somehow. And the third room has very strong backlights, and we start to engage with a dance that, so neither me or Magdalena have tango in our backgrounds. I was for a really long time preoccupied about, can we use this form? Can we not use this form in our work? For me, it was never about the form itself, but rather how tango or like sensual dancing, it's impressed in our imagery of what it is to be erotic with each other, no? So we didn't really, we were rather playing with how we see this dance rather than what this dance is. And there is this duet is like actually very choreographed. Is the one part of the piece that has steps that we follow, which is also very unusual for me. But this time I thought, why not? This has to be here now. And from this moment on, we start to cruise the space quite actively, actually. Yeah.
And there you also make the audience move a lot. You make them a swarm that is sort of following you and moving back and forth. So I had this moment watching it where I felt like you choreographed many more people than the three performers here.
Yes, in a way, yes. And the beautiful thing that was possible in this space also for us to witness is that people were taking really long walks back and forth. And it felt like it's a procession in steps, almost like, I don't know if you have any experience. I had a very Catholic upbringing. I'm not a religious person at all, but I'm fascinated by the representations of things. And, you know, in the on the Holy Friday, so the Friday before Easter, there are groups who sort of like try to reenact the Passion of Jesus and all these 12 steps. So you walk for a while and then you stop and there is a praying, blah, blah, blah. And it felt very similar because people were really like migrating up and down, up and down. Yeah, that was really magical. And this whole scene ends with somehow again re-engaging almost in a representational way with the abandonment, like the sense of being abandoned, which is very present, or like a person that suffers out of love because this person has gone away or has betrayed her. I say her because this is now, we go back into romantic ballet and into Giselle specifically. So after this duet between Magdalena and I, Magdalena has this mad scene that is very inspired by the mad scene of Giselle, realizing that actually she was completely deluded about this man who is not going to be with her, but with a richer girl. And she has this very, very active dance in which she's constantly hallucinating and seeing things that are not there, but then still being happy. And at the same time, she starts to see the villis, which are the creatures that appear in the second act, calling her because she's about to die, actually. And she's going to end up in this forest with them. The villis will always be there in the form of spirits. And after this, there is a moment of quietness somehow in the piece in which I walk to the altar again and I start to fire the charcoals. And slowly we put these charcoals into objects that are a reinterpretation of the thurible in Catholic religion. It's this metal object with chains inside of which priests are putting their incense and they are purifying the space and these objects. I wanted to have a pop heart shape, and in this sense the collaboration with an artist, also Vienna-based, Patrick Winkler, was really beautiful because he was very enthusiastic about this, and together we designed and he built this hearted shaped thuribles. They're beautiful. They're so beautiful. I hope everyone get the chance to see them. And through this we begin a dance of purifying the space. And there is also choreography. It develops very, very slow. And after a very long time of suspension, we are sending in a beautiful Baroque song called Il Pianto di Maria, which means the crying of Mary. And in this song, she just cries about the death of Jesus, basically. But we are using it in a very secular way, like the choreography. It's very almost like a pop dancing because we have this unison going from side to side. It's a little bit sexy, but then it gets more and more brutal. So we are trying to spread this heart everywhere in the room, and it becomes a weapon as well. It starts to become almost like a medieval weapon, but sometimes by playing with the tension of the chain and how we would swing this object around, we could also somehow play with the materiality of the chain in a way that it would become straight and almost look like a sword. And in this sense, there is a bit of like a Jeanne d'Arc recalling of somehow warriors of love and fictional warriors of love in the space. And the whole piece then ends, there is a very, very slow fade out of warm lights, which the only light that stays on is on Manuel, because Manuel is playing the flute in all of this on top of this Baroque composition. And the whole piece ends in a concert situation, which is a completely dark room and the musician playing and us sort of disappeared from the main attention of the audience and just participating in this. Yeah.
That was beautiful to be talked through by you. Do you have the chance to show it again? You know already?
There are some things in dialogue, but nothing is fully confirmed yet, actually. Yeah.
Okay. As I mentioned before, I'm talking to you as part of Lifelong Burning, which is the network that cooperates with Impulse Dance on the Attention series, because Impulse Dance invites the artists to show their performances, while Lifelong Burning invites them to actually stay in Vienna for a bit longer, to enjoy the festival, to have a residency for up to 2 weeks. And I would like to know about this residency. How did you use it? What did you do?
Mm-hmm. So the first week I had this space in the Ballet Academy, which was somehow really funny for me to enter a room that it's inhabited by these ballet souls that are learning and studying throughout the whole year.
All those ghosts.
All of them. Yeah. And somehow in the corridors there are also little pictures of some of them are photos, but many of them are actually drawings, because they come from a time where photography didn't exist. And that was one of them. It was Maria Taglioni, who is like one of the most important romantic ballerinas. And the whole thing made me smile a lot. And I was there only for the first 4 days. And in this time, I was mainly trying to prepare. I was alone. So I was trying to re-access the material of the piece and see if it can go a little bit deeper, because since the premiere, we didn't have the luxury and the resources to afford rehearsals for the other gigs we had after the premiere. And I thought this would be great now, a great chance to actually finally give some time to things that we didn't have time because of the short process we had. So, I was working a bit conceptually in preparation for the week, for the upcoming week. And then already on the Friday of the first week, we could access the Hofstallung, actually, which was really great because, the piece needs this slow inhabiting of the room. And during the second week, it was already the old technical thing happening. So it was a bit of a mix of working technically with the technicians. In the beginning, I thought, actually, my residence should have been just a residency and not so much like this. But then I understood that this working with the space starts to be more and more present also in my artistic practice, and therefore I started to take it also as a research time, even though it was oriented towards, setting up the piece for the show. But I really learned a lot in these days, and it was a mix of working with the technical team but also working with the performers. And what we also did, we would love to record an album with some of the songs, and also the songs that didn't make it into the piece, but that were part of our sessions. So, and this was especially in the first week of residency, we were doing some recordings and therefore also like re-exploring the songs in a different way.
That really sounds like you... got a lot out of it.
Yes,
even some recordings for your next album.
Absolutely.
Great. Yes. And then a little outlook into the future, because we are sitting here end of July in the midst of the festival, and these episodes of the podcast, they get released in autumn, starting from end of September, beginning of October. So when this is going to be sent, people can listen to it. Do you know already what you're going to be up to in autumn?
I am preparing something new. It is still quite conceptual at the moment and not yet fully formalized into a text that I can then try to get support for this project. I am preparing something new, but nothing will happen, I think, until October this year. Yeah, in that sense, I am now part of some other projects, with other choreographers, because this is still very, quite a big part of my practice also, to work with other people, who are maybe more in charge with responsibilities that are not fully artistic around the project, and that I really, really, really enjoy to still keep this balance of self-initiated work and supporting other projects and other artists with what I can.
And are there some specific events that you know already that you would like to mention here?
I will premiere a piece by Reut Shemesh. She's a choreographer based in Cologne, in Germany. And we are premiering this piece at Tanzhaus NRW in Düsseldorf by the end of October, beginning of November. I'm not sure yet, actually. I should check the calendar. But no, I would say the second part of this year is a little bit more relaxed for me. So there is this one project and hopefully some other performances already planned from past projects. And maybe in December we show La Tente again in Germany, but it still has to be confirmed. And yes.
All right. well-deserved rather calm couple of months coming up. Yeah. And doesn't sound too calm anyways.
No.
I thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to see you on stage again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers series. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Deezer, Podcast Addict, Apple Podcast, or Spotify. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsdance.com.